Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Providing insight and resources for your spiritual journey. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to today's show on World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from a sultry day, I would say, in Fort Worth, Texas. I'm here at Unity Fort Worth. Today, we explore the subject of the potentially beneficial effects of the Amazonian medicine called ayahuasca. And joining me is the author of a new book on the subject, a very thorough, detailed, well-written book, entitled Listening to Ayahuasca, New Hope for Depression, Addiction, PTSD, and Anxiety. And more than that, it really is a spiritual guidebook, too, because you can tell that the author is very attuned to the transcendent and that which transforms us. Rachel Harris, PhD, has a long pedigree, a psychologist in private practice for over 35 years. She traces, as I mentioned earlier, her transcendent and transformative roots to the Esalen Institute in the late 60s, where she was a residential fellow. She went on to a research career at the University of Miami School of Medicine, and she received a National Institute of Health New Investigator Award. That's nice. Rachel has published over 40 scientific papers and has led workshops at Esalen and Omega Institutes. The co-author of the best-selling Children Learn What They Live, she now lives on an island off the east coast of Maine and winters in the San Francisco Bay Area. So it's a joy to welcome Rachel Harris to today's show. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Paul.
You know, and I think this is true about the book, too. You know, although your main focus, of course, is on this drug or this medicine, you could tell that it's a means to find a greater spiritual freedom, right? And that sort of is a thread that goes through the book. But before we get into all that, for those people who have no knowledge at all about what the heck, what is this thing called ayahuasca? what is it?
Yes, I'll answer that question. But first, I just want to say thank you for recognizing the bigger context of the book. I actually just responded to an email that I'm going to put on my website soon from someone who has never been in an ayahuasca ceremony but read the book and had this very powerful personal insight and worked on it therapeutically. And so my intention behind the book is that it would be helpful to people before or after an ayahuasca ceremony. So yes, there is a much larger context of healing.
Yes.
Ayahuasca itself is considered a medicine by the indigenous tribes of the Amazon basin, and it's a mixture of two plants. It's really a tea, and two plants are boiled for 12 to 24 hours. And the two plants together make DMT, dimethyltryptamine, available to the human system so we can digest it. And so that's what makes it a psychedelic. That's the psychedelic drug within the the ayahuasca medicine.
Because now you grew up in an era when, you know, many of us were doing, you know, experiments with LSD or psilocybin, peyote, you know, other psychotropic or psychedelic drugs. They were much easier to ingest. I mean, psilocybin isn't much fun, but or peyote, but, you know, the other drugs, you know, you don't have to throw up with them. And yet with ayahuasca, you know, it's kind of, that's part of the whole reason for doing it, right? It tastes vile. It tastes like mud, I think is where you're
It does taste like mud. So there's not much to, entice people. And you do need to be close to a bathroom. It's called a purgative, which means you can vomit and or have diarrhea. So that sort of protects it from being a drug that's going to be used recreationally. It's a it's a real commitment to 6 hours of being close to a bathroom.
But of course, the benefits must be good enough that people are willing to go through that.
You know, it is like a rocket boost to psycho-spiritual development. It's it does an incredible array of healing, and of course, this is how Westerners approach the medicine. In the indigenous cultures, it's used really. As a medicine, well, it gets rid of parasites, for instance, but it can be used to discover who your spouse is having an affair with, or you can discover where the animals are in the jungle that you want to hunt the next day. So the cultural uses are very different. And I've, as a Westerner and as a psychotherapist, I've really focused on how it's being used in developed countries. So it's a big leap from how it's used in the indigenous villages.
Right. Oh, and what you say in the book is that there's a sort of a subculture almost now of ayahuasca use, right? And it's discreet because it's actually illegal in the States, for instance, right? And
you know,
I'm assuming that's true in Europe as well.
Right. It's very interesting because in Peru and Brazil, ayahuasca is considered a cultural treasure. In our country, the plants are legal. I ordered both plants that are involved, the ayahuasca vine and the chacruna plant. I ordered them off of Amazon.com and to send to a friend who's a great gardener because she just wanted to have the plants in her garden. So the plants themselves are legal, and many, many plants contain DMT. It's when you mix them together and the DMT becomes available that when it's ingested into the human system, that's when it's that's when it becomes illegal. That's the tricky part with this. So it has a wide range of therapeutic benefits, but they're yet to be fully discovered, and our culture is very ambivalent about these psychotropic medicines, and you can see that in how we handle the legal situation for marijuana, where there's medical marijuana in almost half the states of the country, but it's still a dangerous drug from the federal government's point of view.
Right. Yeah, we have a sort of a conflicted view, don't we? It's very complicated.
Yes, really.
In terms of all this, you know, and certain states now, you know, making it legal, et cetera. So there's... We're in an interesting transition period, but then we also have so much abuse, you know, of certain drugs that I think, you know, that creates difficulties for any legalization. So, yeah, it's a tough one. And, of course, we all know the war on drugs, you know, is not
it's
in no way successful, right?
It's not been successful, and it really stopped all the research. And some of the initial research into LSD is how they discovered the importance of serotonin and the role that plays in the current antidepressants that are prescribed. So the value of the research was extensive, but it stopped in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So my hope is eventually for more research into this medicine.
So how did you get interested in it initially then?
Well, you know, I'll share how I did, but I have to say this is an example of do as I say, not as I did. you know, what I recommend in the book is that you be very careful. You check out where you, what ceremony you're going to, who knows about them, who the leader is, what the medicine is actually. You know,
yes.
Can you, is it going to be a safe setting, an environment? Are there enough helpers? Because people are really immobilized during the ceremony. I mean, it's, you need help sometimes getting to the bathroom at the right moment. So you really want to be in a very safe, protected, cared for setting. That's not how I did it. I had planned a winter vacation. I was looking for a beach vacation, and I found a retreat center in Costa Rica, and I signed up for a week, and I didn't even pay much attention to what the program was. And a few days before I left for Costa Rica, I get a phone call, and the woman doing the arrangements says, "Do you want to participate in the ceremonies?" And I said, "What ceremonies?" So she described ayahuasca ceremonies. I really had never heard of these kinds of ceremonies, but I happened to have a book about ayahuasca on my bookshelf. You know, I collect books and then I don't read them. And so, you know, I said, "Let me call you back tomorrow." I read the book overnight. I called her back and I said, "Yes, sign me up for the workshop, for the ceremonies at the workshop." And I did, because the book was by Ralph Metzner, and it was a collection mostly of psychologists and therapists reporting on their own ayahuasca experiences and how helpful they had been psychologically.
Right.
So that's been my calling all my life. And as unpleasant as the ceremonies can be in terms of stomach and you know, those kinds of things, it's a very powerful healing experience on so many levels, both psychologically in terms of family of origin issues and childhood trauma, and also spiritually. I mean, people do have spiritual and mystical experiences in the ceremonies. So the range of healing is the most extensive I've ever experienced.
And I've had other folks on my shows talking about their experiences down in Peru and other places, you know, saying that unfortunately there are people who take advantage of seekers, right? And some people are left, you know, unattended or given adulterated drugs rather than the real thing, etc.
Exactly. And so, yes, you have to be very careful where you go. There are unethical shamans, as there are unethical people in every healing and spiritual profession. And they can use, if they put what's, the indigenous term is toe, T-O-E with an accent over the E. It's datura. And it's an anesthetic. And so people dissociate. In other words, they go into a real altered state where they literally can't move. If that's in the mix, it becomes a much more difficult ceremony, and people are far more vulnerable. They might not even realize, it's almost like a date rape drug. People almost don't even realize what's happening to them, and so they can't really defend themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so you put yourself in the hands of whoever is pouring the medicine and whoever is managing the situation. And so that's why you really want to check it out and be very safe beforehand.
Yes, well, that's good words to the wise. And now tell us about, you know, how this is developing in the States, for instance. There are even sort of spiritual communities, churches, right, that focus in
direction. There are churches that originate out of Brazil, and these are what's called syncretic churches. So they're a mix of the ayahuasca ceremonial ritual, which is shamanic, and regular Christian, sort of very Catholic church, and then kind of mediumship that comes from the African influence in Brazil of spiritism. And so this is quite a heady mixture, these three things of ayahuasca, Christianity, and spiritism, mediumship, really. And so these churches are fairly good size in Brazil, and there are churches here connected to the Brazilian churches. One of them is in New Mexico. That's the UDV, Unio de Vegetal, And then the Santo Daime churches are in Oregon. There are two of them. And these churches have gone through the whole legal process in the states of being given the right, all the way up to the Supreme Court, to gain the right to use ayahuasca. They call it, they refer to it as a sacrament within the church, to use it as part of their religious freedom. And so they have a legal right to use what is essentially a psychedelic brew in their church services.
Right, so similar to some of the uses
like the
of peyote,
Native Americans,
right?
Have the right to
use
peyote.
Yeah, Native American use of peyote, which is, you know, illegal in those particular
sacred settings.
Ceremonies. Yeah.
Yes, and there's a large Santo Daime church in Montreal that just recently went through the Canadian version of this process to become legal to use the medicine in their church services, and they refer to it as the Daime. And they basically consider it a gift from God.
So all let's just extend that a little further out. You know, all these drugs that have that mind-altering quality to them seem to point in the direction of releasing us from the confines that we've, or the conditioning that we've allowed to cloud our vision, right? We've become habituated to certain ways of looking. And when we have these openings, then we see that there's maybe more going on. We're freed from having to, you know, slavishly follow a certain path of understanding. So, and this is the purpose, presumably. And yes, it can heal us also. But obviously, when we're in a place of expanded awareness, you know, healing can take place because we're tapping into a larger resource, right, of what's possible for ourselves.
You know, that's absolutely correct. And it sounds like you've used metaphors, but they've done enough research now that they know that this is what you've described is neurologically correct. And the research comes out of, you would know the university if I could remember it, because it comes out of England. And it's a young researcher. He's only in his mid-30s, and he's using mostly psilocybin and I think some studies with LSD. And he's putting people into a functional MRI machine. So you can see the blood flow, what's happening in the brain. And what happens is there's less blood flow that's going to the default mode network. And that's not an anatomical structure. It's a neurological network that goes throughout the brain. And that's what supports our normal, what we think of as our normal way of seeing the world and ourselves. It's kind of, part of it is that inner voice that's constantly, that inner thinking that's constantly going on, kind of planning, ruminating, worrying. You know, everybody knows this voice. It takes up 60% of our time, evidently, which is kind of a horrifying amount.
Right.
And it supports our personality structure, our beliefs in the world, the way we see things. And all the psychedelics reduce that flow of oxygen that supports our so-called normal or ordinary way of seeing things. And that allows new connections to be made. So this is part of why there was research in the 50s and 60s using LSD for creative problem solving, for creativity. They tested it on engineers, actually, in Silicon Valley. Because with the usual way of seeing things dampened and quieted, it allows other connections to be made. And we now know that the psychedelics are all neurogenic. There are new neural connections that are grown. So new ones are made, new ones are grown. I mean, this is an incredible opening up for the brain itself, and it opens us up to new experiences, new ways of being in the world. And this is part of what's healing, and evidently it was part of what was threatening to the status quo back in the 60s and 70s.
Right. I think it was Ram Dass's guru that said that, you know, and of course he was famous for ingesting large amounts of
at one time.
Illicit substances at one time, and nothing happened to him. You know, he could survive anything. But he was making a point, I think. But he said that, you know, it's like a doorway, you know, into another dimensional awareness. Once you've discovered the doorway and walked through, you don't have to keep repeating the journey, you know. You're into another awareness. And that, do you subscribe to that? You know, that some people become habituated to the use of drugs, you know, but drugs are just a means to an end, in a sense. Once you've discovered the freedom, you know, you don't really need the drug anymore.
Yes, that's a different path. Somebody just sent me an email kind of saying, you know, there's a difference between the what's called a psychonaut, somebody as opposed to an astronaut, a psychonaut, someone who is always seeking new sensations, new experiences, new chemical combinations. That's a different process than someone who is really following a path of developing their relationship with one of the plant medicines that has sort of a what's generally considered a plant teacher, and developing that relationship and deepening one pathway.
Mm-hmm. And as you say in the book, you know, grandmother, right? Is it grandmother ayahuasca?
It is grandmother ayahuasca, and people really do have a relationship where they talk to her and hear back from her, and it's still mind-blowing for me. It's quite remarkable for me to hear, I mean, in my research, for so many Westerners to say they have an ongoing relationship with a plant spirit. It's not something that's usually accepted in our culture, but that's the deepening path.
Right. Yeah, very interesting. Folks, I'm with Rachel Harris. We're talking about her new book, Listening to Ayahuasca. I'm sure we have many more questions to ask, but we're going to take a break, listen to these messages from Unity, and we'll be right back. Join us then.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support. Kintsugi is an ancient Japanese art form of fusing broken pottery pieces together by filling the cracks with gold. The resulting piece is not only restored and visually stunning, it also takes on a new life. Whatever has happened in the past, however broken we may feel, we can be whole again by filling our lives with the transformative power of God. Our experiences make us unique. The presence of God makes us whole. As Paul wrote in his letter to the Romans, be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Remember, with God, all things are possible.
This Mindful Moment is brought to you by Daily Word Magazine. Finding time for the positive reminders in Daily Word is easy with the digital edition, perfect for smartphones and readers on the go. Take advantage of our 30-day free trial to the online magazine, plus a daily email with the word for the day and the Daily Word app. To sign up for a free 30-day trial, visit unityonlineradio.org/dailyword.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul. the lotus and the lily, and your soul wants five things. As she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
Yeah, and just to let you know, folks, in a few weeks' time, I am going to take a sabbatical for 10 weeks, and I'm taking World Spirituality on the road. So we're going to go all over the place, probably in the States and abroad. And my wife and I are going to tune in every week to create the show, and hope you tune in too. And we'll let you know where we're going to be that week, and hopefully interview some interesting people on our journey. Today, I've got a very interesting person. Her name's Rachel Harris. We're talking about her fascinating book, Listening to Ayahuasca. And on page 199, there's a wonderful story about a man living in the Northern California Redwoods, and went out to commune with, he was a very successful man, but he also had some addictions. And he went out to commune with the Redwoods in a fairy circle, which is a beautiful ring of trees that are all linked together with shared roots, and has a certain power and energy. And while he was there, he had this wonderful revelation. A message came to him from the trees, and it said, if you want to join the tree clan, you have to stop bowing down to weeds. And at that time, he was addicted to cigarettes and marijuana, and et cetera. And it's a powerful thing, isn't it? It's like saying, come on up higher. You know, we got bigger work to do here. You don't have to be down in the weeds. And I love that idea. But, of course, then I asked myself, well, wait a minute, ayahuasca is a weed too, isn't it? So he'd had some insights using ayahuasca, but are we supposed to give up all ways in? You know, are we supposed to, because don't they become crutches? If we're going to follow the trees into the nobility of their, you know, verticality, do we want to be messing around at lower levels? What's your response to that, sort of playing the devil's advocate on this a little bit?
Yes. Well, first of all, just that he heard the message is amazing.
Yes.
And I think the most difficult addiction to give up is this, as many, many people know, is tobacco, is the cigarette habit. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, there are two schools of thought with marijuana. Some of the churches include marijuana as Santa Maria, as another plant, as another sacred plant, and some of them don't. So in this case, because I know this person, I would say both the cigarette, of course, the cigarette smoking is a really destructive habit, and that marijuana is at the level of a habit. And so I was very hopeful that this would be what I refer to in my book as a miracle cure, because some people really do overnight kind of say, you know, I see the error of my ways. I'm never touching sugar again. Or, mm-hmm. you know, there's a spontaneous breakthrough. And this particular person that I'm writing about, who I called William, he was on his way to becoming an alcoholic. So you see there's an addictive personality there. And after one or two ceremonies, he stopped drinking. And alcohol is really no longer a problem. I followed him up for 7 or 8 years. I know this man well.
Right.
So I thought, oh, he'll have another spontaneous healing. But no, it's a year or so later, and he's still smoking cigarettes and marijuana. And I don't know what will happen. And not every, you know, we don't know why some people have a miracle cure. I mean, some people have a lifelong depression and it lists after a few ceremonies, and it never comes back. We don't have a Western explanation for that. You know, they don't even have to continue to drink ayahuasca. There's such a shift that happens inside of them that they're no longer bothered with depressive moods. But that doesn't happen to everyone, and we can't predict who it's going to happen for. And some people, you know, get nothing, bumpkis, as we say, you know. And so there's this wide range, and so it's quite unpredictable. It makes it very difficult to research.
And some people
report feeling guilty about, you know, I had a ceremony and Grandmother Ayahuasca told me to do whatever. I mean, this one guy I interviewed and followed up, he was in a heavy, it was a summer of cocaine he was doing. He was a graduate student. And he felt very guilty about not following her advice. He knew she was right. He should stop this behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And he eventually did, but he felt very guilty about that summer. So he sort of said to her, I can't stop now, so I won't come back for another ceremony till after I've stopped. And about a year later, he stopped and went back for a ceremony. So, you know, we all have, this is what I mean by, it's sort of a real negotiable ongoing relationship with a plant spirit. So, and I can speak for myself as a sugar addict, you know, eating too much sugar and carbohydrate, that for years I have asked for a spontaneous healing, you know, let me crave green vegetables instead of pizza. And it's only very recently, and I don't even know if it's going to stick, that I can sense a little shift. So, you know, it's an ongoing process. But I can say when people do have this kind of spontaneous healing, it's effortless. It's not like they're holding on for grim death, I need another drink, and I'm going to resist it. It's effortless. They really wake up the next morning, and they say, I see now that alcohol is a poison, and I'm never touching it again. I mean, that's a literal quote. So, you know, I can be, you know, it's hard for me to get a good balance here, because the miracle cures are so amazing, and they change people's lives. And yet there are real dangers, and I've been reading recently about people who have had a psychotic break after an ayahuasca ceremony. And so there are real dangers involved as well.
And if, right, and we, yeah, and you've got
you know,
whole,
if somebody has a history, then I would not recommend
that.
It. But, you know, sometimes they don't have a history, and then they're, you know, their whole life is changed from a ceremony in a way that's very painful.
Yes. Yeah, so no easy guarantees or whatever about this. Like life itself, you know, and I think the spiritual path itself, there are many people who, you know, who have been on the spiritual path for 30, 40 years or more and are still, you know, attached to all their old conditioning and take things personally and this, that, and the other. And you wonder, well, why, what have they been doing for all this
exactly.
time? You know? Maybe
my
we just don't
exactly.
want to be free. I don't know. Or then there's the other side of it, which is that wonderful phrase that John Wellwood, I think, came up with. And you quoted in the book, you know, spiritual bypassing, right, where we hope to get to a transcendent state before we're really ready, before we've worked through some of the other stuff within us, and we're irritated with people who point out that we may be not as advanced as we think we are, you know, because
right.
once they really get with the ball, they'll understand how wonderfully free I am, because it's not usually
right.
not usually quite that way, is it?
No.
It's nice to be ordinary, I think, you know.
We all want
to be extraordinary, but I think it's nice to be ordinary as well.
You know, we all come from parents and a family, and it's that family of origin work that screws us up every time.
Yeah, there we go.
I mean, that is the foundation of our programming. I mean, I'm speaking as someone who has spent 35 years, you know, in a private psychotherapy practice, and it's, you know, it's our own histories. and that play out in our lives. Unless we become really clear and conscious about them, you know, we're doomed to repeat.
Yes,
the pattern.
That's right. And so, and you know, I think the part of this is we have this desire to be something different from what we are, you know, and radical self-acceptance can be a beautifully freeing thing too. In other words, we can still be this, you know, fragile and broken person, and yet at the same time be gloriously whole and free. You know, it's a seeming conundrum, but I think it's probably closer to freedom than trying to, you know, make ourselves perfect or whatever, which is never going to happen. You know, the God loves us, if you like, the divine accepts us just the way we are, right? And to allow that to be true for ourselves as well, for our self-talk to say, I'm okay just the way I am, you know, it's quite healthy, actually.
Yes, I love that term, radical self-acceptance. I'm very interested in good behavior, though. I'm not interested in radical self-acceptance and bad behavior.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's
so
okay,
you know, the rubber meets the road when when we look at our behavior and how, and by that I mean how we treat others, how we treat our relationships, how we behave in the world. Yes, you know, we all know when we've lost our temper and we really should have made a different choice or we behaved badly. We know when we do things like that. So
right.
It's how to make that choice to take what the Buddhists would call right action. And
yes.
that doesn't always mean, you know, in that sort of old-fashioned way, oh, I'm going to forgive everybody. I'm really not a proponent of that. You know, as a therapist, you know, some people have done things that are unforgivable, and we should not forget them. But how do we handle the traumas, the wrongs that have been done to us, or the people who have really wronged us? How do we deal with that in our lives? What do we do with it? What are our choices? And to really work that through so we have that freedom of choice, that we're not just reactive.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is an excellent point about behavior because, you know, we're not condoning horrific behavior here just because, well, I accept myself unconditionally or whatever.
Really?
You know, and that's really not part of the program here. That's metaphysical malpractice, isn't it? Where we think that everything's great, you know, it's all good.
Yeah.
In fact, there was quite an amusing Bob Dylan song that he put out in the recent album about it's all good, and he sort of blows the idea that, you know, we're the sort of superficial psychological or spiritual idea, new age idea that it's all good. It's not all good.
No.
And of course, you know, Bob has got a way of presenting it in an ornery kind of ornery contrarian kind of way, which was actually works quite well. It's quite amusing.
I have to look that up.
Yeah, it's a good song.
There's something
going
about
off task
the persona of Grandmother Ayahuasca is she is not all sweetness and light, let me tell you. She's
right.
A harsh taskmaster, and she will let you know what she wants. And I can give you an example. I don't know if you know the rather famous people. He was Alexander Shulgin and Anne Shulgin. He's dead, and he was a chemist who invented a lot of different psychedelic compounds. And she worked therapeutically with MDMA before it became illegal. And so these people were revered within the psychedelic community. And I just came across an article they wrote about their own ayahuasca experience. And after the first night, Anne, the woman, when she wrote this, she was probably in her 70s. She said, I heard a voice, and it said, don't come back. Basically, you're not one of mine. Don't come back. Mm. And they were with people they knew, and so other people were staying for a second night of ceremony. So they stayed the second night. They both had miserable experiences both nights, and it was not therapeutic or healing or anything. The second night, she goes into the altered state, and she hears the voice, and Grandmother Ayahuasca says to her, "Didn't you hear me? I told you not to come back." I mean, Grandmother Ayahuasca does not tolerate fools. I mean, she lets you know. And Anne, in this little interview, basically says, you know, I got the message on the second round.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
But that's, people report those kinds of things. The other great report is from a young guy who said, "Yes, I heard a voice that was very powerful. And I said, what did the voice say?" And he looks at me sort of sheepishly, and he says, "Grandmother Ayahuasca told me to go home and clean my room and cut my hair."
There we go.
And I thought, you know, that's very good advice on the behavioral day-to-day living kind of level. And that's who we are spiritually. I'm very grateful for every peak experience I've had. And who I am when someone pulls in front of me on the road is
yes.
who I am. And
that's right.
So, you know, that's where the work is in the day to day.
Well, after the ecstasy, the laundry, you know, as they say. So
yeah.
We still have to do the regular things, don't we? But
yeah.
It also sounds to me like, you know, Grandmother Ayahuasca is a little bit like the Hindu gods, you know, and the guru will often say that to you, you know, go back to the West and do your work, as opposed to just blissing out forever, you know, at the ashram. But I'm thinking of, you know, the benign and seemingly malevolent aspects of the female, you know, of say Kali and Parvati, you know, the blessing and gentle side, and then this harsh side that really is going to devour everything and destroy everything in sight. But sometimes we need that, right? We need that firmness. And we need to understand that we are walking the razor's edge between beauty and terror, you know, on any given day. And it's something we have to come to terms with, right? We can't jettison the one. And
no.
Only want the beauty. You know, you can't have the beauty without the terror. And
Right.
We see this so strongly in our world today with so many horrific things happening, you know, to people on a daily basis. So,
right, and this is, you know, what you're talking about psychologically is the shadow.
Yes.
And the capacity to intentionally do harm to ourselves or to others. And this is, you know, humanity is, we are really facing this as in the whole world, the harm we do. So, our future is at stake with dealing with this urge to self-destruct.
Absolutely. Well, it seems to me that all portals, whether it be ayahuasca or meditation or ritual or whatever, they're going to mirror to us what's already within our psyches, right? What's deep within our core, and so really, they're opportunities to see ourselves more clearly. And obviously, yes, there's a dark side to all the things that are within us, because most of us, most of who we are, is unconscious, isn't it? There's a very small percentage of us on a normal day that is conscious. Most of it is going on other realms.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Even the decision, you know, when they've done, I mean, this is such a concrete example, but it's the neurological evidence for what you just said. The decision to move your finger happens neurologically before you become aware of the decision and the movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might be a fraction of a second or so, but there's still a gap there, so that something happens unconsciously before it rises to our awareness.
You know, I keep quoting this, but I think I've said it in too many shows now, but I like it. It's from Glenn Frey. There was a history of the Eagles, and he said that when they were at the peak of their powers, you know, and going through the excitement of writing their best songs and plus imbibing too much and sleeping around too much, maybe, it all seemed very, very chaotic at the time. But when they looked back on it, they saw that there was an order and a harmony to it. And I thought this was interesting, because so often in life, you know, we we don't see the pattern. We're too involved in dealing with whatever is going on that we don't see that there's some kind of higher guidance here that from our subconscious, from our superconscious, perhaps that is guiding us skillfully along. And and like you said, the finger moves before we even know it's consciously going to do that. So I think if you take ayahuasca or some of these other drugs that can open you in that direction, you begin to see some of these processes at work, right? And you realize, oh my goodness, there is so much more going on here than I thought was even possible.
Right. The Eagles they're a Boston band, aren't they? Were they from Boston?
They all gathered out in L.A. eventually. Some were from Chicago, some were from Texas. But
Then I'm not sure. I know there was one famous rock and roll band that a friend of mine, another psychologist, did work with, which I thought was fascinating for a rock and roll band to work with a therapist as a family, basically. He did family work with them. Because the band is living together and traveling together and getting in trouble together. And so they did a lot of therapeutic work. I think, as a therapist, I try not to push it too hard, but, I can't help myself, obviously. I think therapy makes a huge difference. And when it comes to really a deep level of acceptance and working through the shadow elements, facing ourselves, the parts we don't want to face that we'd rather transcend, and how we then integrate that material into our daily lives, I think therapy makes all the difference. And the way psychedelics were used in Europe in the 50s and written about therapeutically in the 60s is it was a psycholytic approach, so that the psychedelics were used sporadically as part of an ongoing therapeutic process. They weren't the main event. Now the way the research is going in the West is, especially the studies out of Hopkins, they've identified the right dose of psilocybin to maximize the chance of having a complete mystical experience. And they're treating that as the therapeutic variable. That's what makes the difference. That's what changes people's lives. And, there's no argument. A full mystical experience will change your life forever. There's absolutely truth in that. And you can still, even after that, act out family of origin problems and have bad behavior.
Right.
So therapeutically, I think there's a lot to be said for that process of moving deeply within, with or without the help of entheogens, psychedelics, and then working with a therapeutic process in your life. What's happening in your life? How does this manifest? What does it mean? And then moving back and forth between those two levels of consciousness and learning, and how to really integrate them over time. And that's a long process.
It is a long process, and I think, less is more is what we're saying, too, that we have a tendency in our society to think that, the more I take, the more transcendence I'm going to get, and I remember being in Kathmandu back in the 70s, early 70s, and maybe doing a little more than I should have, but drugs-wise, but there were people around me that were just totally out of it all day and every day. It's like, wait a minute, how much do you need here? I just need a little bit and I'd be, had enough to go on for a long time, to process and to analyze and to open myself. So, idea of psycholytic or whatever.
Yeah. Yes, it's psycholytic versus psychedelic, which is to go for the max. And what you're describing, there are two variables in what you're describing. One is how often you take the drug or the medicine, and the other is how much you take. And so more is not better in either way. It's more frequent is not necessarily better, and larger doses are not necessarily better. It's really how you work with the experience. And there really needs to be a transfer of information and insight from the altered state of consciousness into everyday, ordinary life.
Right.
And I think it was Houston Smith who said, a spiritual experience does not make a religious life.
And the converse is true.
Yeah.
You know, just because you're religious doesn't mean you're necessarily spiritual. You know,
that way too.
Yeah, I think the spiritual path is about direct experience, you know, whereas the religious path is about the tradition. And sometimes they can be married together, but I think ultimately, if you're serious about, you know, working the spiritual path, you want to have a direct experience of something and whatever that might be. But I think some people are more sensitive than others, right? Some people, it takes a mallet to wake them up, kind of thing. Other people, just a little feather or something. So we're all different.
Different, and the people who need the hammer over the head are often the proponents of higher doses and more frequent.
Right,
because
there
that's what they need. Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, I don't know about therapists for rock bands, but I had Richard Rohr on my show. I don't know if you're familiar with Father Richard Rohr.
Yes, he's a
wonderful, non-dualist. He was on my show a little while ago, and he said, I noticed there was a quote on his book from Bono of U2, and he said, oh, yeah, they came for a retreat with me for the 40th anniversary of the founding of the band. And it just hung for a weekend. It was cool. I thought, that's nice. I like that. So Richard Rohr was, conducting a retreat for the rock band U2, which is fun. I'm sure they got a lot out of it. Yeah.
And you know, we need to hear more about this kind of thing in our culture. People don't talk about these depth spiritual experiences. It's not cocktail conversation. But people often don't share it, or if they have a spontaneous mystical experience, they sometimes think they're crazy or they shouldn't talk about it. Someone else will think they're crazy. And I think we have to really expand in our culture what the human experience is, and that it does include these mystical experiences.
Well, and that's even truer in Europe, where, you know, it's a much more secular culture, and once people think that you're being spiritual, it's like, I'm not going to pay any attention because you've moved from sanity into, you know, fanciful thinking and all that. They just don't give it any credence. You mentioned the word mysticism, and it's kind of, that's mumbo jumbo. And it's so sad because really what they're throwing out is, all kinds of experiences that everyone has. I don't think mystics are just people, on top of mountains. I think we're all mystics, aren't we? We all have that capability.
Yes. And, you know, both the Gallup poll and the Pew Research survey, they ask people, have you had a spiritual experience that was very meaningful or changed your life? It was that sort of question. And 50% of the people said yes.
Yeah. Mm.
That's a very high percentage of people having an experience that we don't talk much about.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. All right, we have a couple minutes left in the show. What are you hoping to achieve through this book?
You know, you introduced me with my intention and hope for the book, and that is that it would be helpful for people working on themselves psychologically and spiritually. And, of course, it's specific for people considering an ayahuasca ceremony or following up on one. But my whole private practice for all those years, my whole career has been working in these realms, and so I'm hoping the book is helpful for people in this way.
Right, and there are many good insights in the book, and it goes into specific detail on various elements of that. So for those who would like to dip into it, it's way over 300 pages long, so there's a lot of sensitively written insight here for people. We've talked about some of the subjects, but there's a lot more in the book that we haven't really touched on, which I think many of us who are looking for new hope for, say, depression or addiction, anxiety, you know, going to find some insight that you might benefit from. So it's published by the wonderful New World Library, and of course it's available everywhere that books are sold. And they can go to your website, can't they? Listening to ayahuasca.com, is that a good one?
Yes.
Yeah. All one word, listening to ayahuasca. That's AYAHUASCA. Listening to ayahuasca.com. Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Rachel. Next week, author, humorist, and yoga teacher Brian Leaf is back on the show again. He's been on the show a number of times. Great guy. This time he's going to discuss his new book of practices and insights entitled The Teacher Appears, 108 Prompts to Power Your Yoga Practice. So he'll be on the show next Tuesday. So tune in then. But right now I want to thank Rachel Harris for being such a wonderful guest on today's show. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Paul.
All right. Like I say, thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you soon. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Have you ever considered that everything you think, say, and do is a prayer to the universe? What would your life be like if you activated the power of yes? Join Reverend Beverly Molander and her exciting guests on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes, to find out how they activated the power of yes in their lives, their communities, or even the world. If they can do it, you can too. Listen to Beverly Molander and her guests live every Monday at noon Central, 1 p.m. Eastern, on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Remember when you entered first grade? Did you find it hard to believe you'd ever be able to learn and do all that was expected of you? Do you remember how, through your own consistent effort and the support of your parents and teachers, you did learn the basics and went on to master more complex skills? Life is a process similar to the one we experience in school. As we move through life and attempt to expand our awareness of who we are and what life is all about, we encounter new problems, such as the schoolroom of daily living. We can approach each situation with a positive attitude, take one step at a time, and know it's only a matter of persistence before we arrive at a solution. Repeated efforts will accomplish any undertaking. This law of life is brought to you by Unity.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Experience the peace and joy promised by A Course in Miracles? Or are you still struggling to truly live your beliefs from moment to moment? Let Reverend Jennifer Hadley help you focus on your intent to be the love, be the peace, through practical application by walking your talk. Experience the healing live every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central on A Course in Miracles, Living the Love, Walking the Talk, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.